Kulana Blak Gemara, it's Erev Shabbos Shuva. We are on Daf Mem Zayin Amid Aleph. And basically we learned a number of rules regarding Halacha Be'Beku, between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yasi and such, and Rabbi Yehuda and so on and so forth. And then you have Meshasha who said that these rules are not correct. So we're trying to find out why he said they're not correct. And every time we find a halacha that says someone halacha like Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda, so we answer the same answer. The default position is we'll passing like Rabbi Yehuda, or like Rabbi Yaisi. But if we clearly specify that halacha Rabbi Shimon, so be it. So we're going to go through some more cases. We are up to now. The last one we did was about the Ediv, the only thing we did conclude is that Rav. When Rab overheard how Rab Chiya bar Ashi was teaching his son Chiya bar Rav, and Rav said, make sure you tell him the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, so we see clearly Rav doesn't believe in that rule. So that's what we know. Rav doesn't believe in that rule. But how do we know that what Rabbi Yechina said isn't correct? Ella, right in the middle of the page, the first of the line is Les Leilahani Kulali. Ella Mahadatnan, if everybody can please mute themselves. Mahadatnan, we learned Hayivamba. So Yivamba is someone whose husband passed away, and they didn't have. If everybody can please mute themselves. If the Yevama just passed away, her husband passed away with no children, and now she has to remarry to a brother-in-law. So the din is a Yevama leisachlitz. She should not receive chalitza, and the latest yabim, nor should she get married to a brother-in-law ad sheyiyu lo shlei chadashim, till 3 months expire. And why the idea of 3 months? Because then we can determine whether she's pregnant from her first husband. Because maybe she's pregnant. If she's pregnant, then there's no chalitza there whatsoever. That means that she can marry a kohen. A widow is allowed to marry a kohen. But if she's a chalutza midrabbanan, she can't. And so on. Now, so Rashi already asked an interesting question. So why can't she get a chalitza in 3 months and then wait? And after the 3 months, if she doesn't have a child, then she is free. And if after 3 months she does have a child, then the chalitza is like it never happened. So there's no loss either way. And even if she has a child, the child does not survive, right? So she'll get a second time chalitza. So Rashi answered, because what happened? Maybe she will have a child. And therefore the first chalitza is not really a chalitza, because she turned out to be that she had a child from the first husband, so she didn't need and doesn't have for the second one. And therefore now you have to announce that she's now allowed to marry a kohen, because previously when she had a chalitza a month ago, everyone thought she cannot marry a kohen. But now that it turned out she had a child, she can marry a kohen. And what happens, there were people who heard the first announcement that she's a chalitza. They didn't hear the second announcement that she had a kid, and then they see that she gets married to a kohen. They think, we didn't realize a chalutza is allowed to marry a kohen. So that's why she had to wait 3 months to avoid any misunderstandings. V'chein likewise, shakal noshim, says the Gemara further, any woman, lo yinasu, any woman should not get married, v'lo yis'arsu, nor even get engaged, in those days engaged with Maha Torah, at sheyila shlosh chadoshim, until 3 months go by from when her husband passed away, or when her husband, they divorced. Because again, she might have a child, and then we don't know, and she gets remarried, we don't know whose child it is, the first husband or the second husband. And we need to know. Because what happens if, let's say, one of the brothers from the new marriage dies, and his wife needs to marry a brother-in-law? To only marry brother-in-laws who share the same father. But if we think that this child was from the new father, and in fact it's from the old father, it's a Isur Mahatayra to marry the sister-in-law. So we need to know who the father is, and other reasons as well. Says more further, Achi, Echad Basulis. We don't care when they got married, if they were married as a virgin. And the Achas Bulus, whether they were remarried before or they were divorced, whatever it is, Achad Almanas Bechad Gerushas. And it makes no difference whether they are widowed or whether they're divorced. And Echad Arusav, it makes no difference if they're all merely engaged or they were married. All cases, you have to wait 3 months after the divorce or after the death. You have to wait 3 months. So then, to avoid all problems, and let's not get sticky and start making all kinds of exceptions. That's the first opinion. Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, Nisuyes, if they were married and her husband died or divorced, yes, arsu. She's allowed to get engaged because there's no question there whose father it is, because you're only engaged. They're living it together. The arusa is, but if she, all she was engaged to somebody who then divorced her or he died, then you know, so why can't she get married? There's no issue here whatsoever. Chutz, the only people that cannot get married are Ma'arusa, if she was engaged in Yehuda, in that region in Yisrael known as Yehuda, with Yishlaim and all that. Over there, we don't trust the Chassanim, if they should leave a gaspa. They were very close, and who knows, maybe they had a relationship, even though they weren't married yet, they were just merely engaged. Mahatura were engaged, and therefore we have to determine the child, whose child it is. Says the Gemara further, that's opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosi comes along and says, Kol Hanoshim, all the women, Yisarsu, all women can get engaged, is not a problem. All women can get engaged. Chutz min almana. So he argues the only one who should not get engaged, even engaged, is a widow. She has to first mourn her past husband. It doesn't look right, unless you know we have Purim and all those things. It doesn't look right if she gets remarried straight away. It's not respectful to her first husband. So at least during the Avelos period, she should not get engaged. But if she's divorced, no problem. Get engaged straight away, the day afterwards. We say, Rebbe, or Abelazel, Le'ol Le'Bei Medrosh, Rebbe didn't go to the Beis HaMedrash on that day. He met Rabbi Asi, David Koyin, that was standing there. What did they rule in Beis HaMedrash today? Omele, he said, Hachim Rabbi Yechon. Rabbi Yechon said, this is Rabbi Yechon, the very same Rabbi Yechon who made all these rules, the halacha ki Rabbi Yosi. Now, Rabbi Yosi was the rule before was Rabbi Yosi, the halacha is always like him, even if he argues with a whole bunch of people. And here Rabbi Yechon made a declaration, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi, that what? That to get engaged, everybody can get engaged straight away except the widow. Miklal, the Yechidah, Paul the Galah. It seems from here, that by saying halacha ki Rabbi Yosi, it sounds like that that somebody's arguing with him. And the one who's arguing with him is only a single individual. The first opinion is not the Tanakhama, which normally means the rabbis, all the rabbis. Here, it's a lone opinion. And the question is, who is that? The author of that first opinion, the lone opinion? Who is that opinion? Somebody says, "In yes, you're right, it is a lone opinion, and I'll tell you it is. So this is what Debbie was discussing of Asi. Well, Tanya could be learned. Let's say she was, for her, she frequently went to visit her family's house. She was not really very close with her husband's family. She used to constantly go back to her own family. She had a fight with her husband. Or her husband. There was all these chances that there was nothing really going on between her and her husband while he was alive or before they divorced. Or her husband was old or sick, and therefore probably had no relations. Or perhaps that she was sick, or what happens, she was a barren woman, and we're talking about a barren woman, says Rashi, that it's been established that she's barren. She married three different men and didn't conceive with any of them. So therefore she's established that she's barren, or zikena, she's an elderly woman, which means that she stopped having a period, so she's not going to bear children. Oktana, she's really young, so can't conceive. Or the island is a woman who's sterile, is not able to have any children. Island is actually from the word isle, which is a ram. No, it has all the male features, doesn't have any, it has flat chested and all that. So therefore she does not going to conceive. All of these cases, which are ain't really, she just can't have children because she decided to sterilize herself. Her husband was even around. He was incarcerated. Or hamapeles la'acha misibaylo, or let's say she miscarried a couple of days after her husband died. So therefore, if there was a child, it's gone. Kulan tzichin lahamtin gimel chadoshim. A mayor holds, they still have to wait 3 months. So we see clearly the first author of our Mishnah, it says no name, is actually a mayor, a loan offer. And Rabbi Yosi matir le'odis ulinasin liyad. The mayor and Rabbi Yosi allows you to go ahead and marry straight away. Okay, so it's Rabbi Meir. Now the question is, Rabbi Yechon is one to rule for. Now there Rabbi Yosi against Rabbi Meir, that looks like Rabbi Yosi, in fact, basically against all of his friends. So why did Rabbi Yechon, the same Rabbi Yechon, come along here and make a ruling that that looked like Rabbi Yosi? It was totally unnecessary. The Amr, Rabbi Meir, raised a look like Rabbi Yosi. So why did he say it? Must be Rabbi Yechon never said it. That Rabbi Shashi is right. Rabbi Yechon never made that rule. Says the Gemara, my kusha. Maybe there's a special reason why he established halacha Rabbi Yosi, even though he had his default position halacha Rabbi Yosi, because he was against a mayor. And why would a mayor ban all those cases where it's highly improbable? It's impossible that she would have a child. Obviously, it's a takana because he doesn't make exceptions. So it's not a logical thing. It's a takana. It's a rule. And what do we know about rules? Are Amar Shmuel Amar? He might lafukim la Nachman Shmuel. He wants to negate the opinion of Nachman Shmuel Amar, who says that halacha kiramei begzeroisev. When Amei made a gzera, then you know, even though it might be illogical, we followed Ramey in his gzedus. So we would have thought that in this case, this falls under the banner of gzedus. We follow Ramey. That's why they say halacha b'yasi. But otherwise, when there's a general argument in halach itself, by default, we pass on Rabbi Yisi. Ella, so why would a Mishashia say that this rule doesn't apply? Ella, Mahalatani, we learn, Holchin li yadid shal nochrim, you're allowed to go to a fair from Goyim. We're talking about around the Goyisha holidays. And we learn, Maravoy Dezara, we don't want to deal with them then, because then they turn around and they go to the churches and thank their God for this wonderful deal they just made, taking money from the Yid. But you're allowed to go to the Ari to buy the following things. You're allowed to buy for them a behema. You're allowed to buy them from animals, even though it's right around their holidays. Or avodim, you're allowed to buy servants, slaves, v'shvoches, and maids. Why you're allowed to buy them? Rashi says, interesting, because when the moment that a slave or a maid or an animal comes under the balabatishkeit of a yid, it's elevated to kedusha. Even though you didn't make it holy. An Eved and a Shivcha, you can understand. They start doing mitzvahs, they go through conversion. But a Behema, just the fact that there's a Jewish owner already becomes, Rashi says, Machnitzin L'Kedusha, brings Kedusha to the animal, just the ownership of a Yid. Interesting. But in Yilada, buy from them houses, Vesodas, and fields, Vikramim, and vineyards. And Rashi says, the reason why you're allowed to do that is because you're reducing their wealth. But more than that, he says, if it's an Eretz Yisrael, there's a mitzvah Eretz Yisrael to just continue buying up whatever you can in Israel and put it under Jewish ownership. The koyisiv umayle be'koyish alehen, you're allowed to write their contracts, you're allowed to even agree to go to their courts, even though their courts might be religious courts and so on and so forth, maybe matzim liyodan, because you are rescuing assets from them and bringing it over to us. And what's the advantage of that? Either could you bring them to Kedusha, like Rashi says, or because the mitzvah of Yishev Eretz Yisrael, if it's in Israel. Furthermore, if you were a koyin, b'chutz l'aretz, you're allowed to go ahead and contaminate yourself in chutz l'aretz, lodain, in other words, midrabanan, a koyin, as soon as he steps foot in chutz l'aretz, he becomes tamei. The ofer amim, the dust out there, is already, because we say the body's everywhere, he becomes tamei straight away. Just by going outside, which midrabanan makes it tamei, you're allowed to do that. if you have to go to court and argue about assets that you have from them. And then he goes further, Kashem Shemetame, because it's an Indian to take over their assets. Kashem Shemetame, you're allowed to go outside, Kach Metame is a Kvaras. You're allowed to, according to enter a cemetery if he has to, if that's where the court is convening. Says the Gemara, Beis HaKvaras, Sakadat, or Tumidaraisi. How can a coin walk into the Beis HaKvaras? As noble as the thought is, you can't walk into a coin, it's forbidden from the Torah to walk into a cemetery. Ella, but Beis HaPras, Rabbanan, we're talking about a Beis HaPras, a place that used to have a caver that was plowed through, but we're worried that maybe there's a bone somewhere, the size of a lentil, some of the Rabbanan, you're not allowed to go in there, and so on. Umitame, and he's allowed to, another thing that allowed him to metame himself with the Rabbanan, besides taking assets from the Goy, or arguing about the assets you purchased from them, is Bizman She'ein Moitzel Lumoit, if you, Lisa Isha, you're allowed to go to marry a woman. That's good grounds to go to Chutz La'aretz, even though a Kohen is becoming tummy by doing that. Or even Lil Matayda. He wants to go learn by a certain Rosh Yeshiva. He's allowed to go to Chutz La'aretz, even though he's being metame. Omar Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Yehuda, Eimasai, when do we allow you to, a woman, obviously there's only one woman, that's your wife. But when it comes to learning Torah, if there are plenty of yeshivas at Yisrael, you have no right to. Shei Moitzeluma, you can't find a teacher where qualified in at Yisrael. Avon Moitzeluma lo yidma, but if you can find someone, you shouldn't go outside of at Yisrael. And because you have to confine yourself to wherever it is you are and find a teacher there. Rabbi Yehuda agrees. So again, Rabbi Yehuda is arguing for Yehuda. Even if you find a teacher in the soul, you have a right to go to Chutz La'aretz. Why? If you she'ein min ha'kol zoicha odom lumoid. Not every teacher that will be good for you, and therefore you know which teacher is perfect for you. And in fact, the other part of it is that, you know, a person should learn where his heart desires. And Rashi says, interesting, what do you mean not every teacher is good for you? Rashi says on top of the page that you cannot learn from everybody, because there are some teachers that they are very clear and very coherent. And then he says, and our teachers who teach their students, in a brief way. They don't waffle on and on and on, which and long-winded and so on, shiurim. And maybe and some people enjoy that better, or a lot of people enjoy that better. Okay, in America, so we have an Agma Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, if you're allowed to go. By the way, the Radvaz in Tshuva uses this Gemara here, or the idea that, you know, you only learn in better places, certain places where you want to learn. He uses the same idea. There was a big shul in town, and there's a lot of little shtiblach, and the chief rabbi there in Alexandria wanted to shut them all down. And because he says, Reivam Hadas Melech, we should only have big shuls. Same debate we have today. And he wrote to the Advaz saying that he ruled all the shtiblach and the smaller shuls should shut down, and everyone should go move into the very, you know, shuffle into the very large shuls. And the Advaz said that's totally wrong, because just like the Gemara says that a person cannot learn from everywhere, can only learn where his heart really desires, the same thing applies to davening. And the people like smaller shtiblach, more intimate groups, where everyone knows everybody, and that's where they feel like daven better, then on the contrary, they should be encouraged. So interesting that debate took place 500 years ago, and everything has a precedent in time. Anyway, says the Gemara further. Rabbi Yosef says, "Ma'ase bi Yosef HaKoyin." There's a story with Yosef HaKoyin. We have him a number of times brought down the Gemara. And Shaholach, also we're going to get a Pesach. Shaholach etzar Rabbi Litzidon l'mitoyde. He went to his Rebbe in Sidon to learn Toyde, which is Lebanon. So he went outside Eretz Yisrael, and there were plenty of malamdim in Eretz Yisrael, but he decided to go there. Rabbi Yechon said, so we see that what? He followed Rabbi Yechon's opinion. Rabbi Yechon here came along and said, halachic like Rabbi Yechon. If Rabbi Yechon said what you said, he claimed that he said, the halachic Rabbi Yechon, why do you have to spell out the halachic Rabbi Yechon? Isn't that automatically the default position? Why do you have to say that? Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi Yechon, Rabbi says, it's a chwinidit. You know why? Salke datach, I mean, I would have thought, hani mili b'mas nisin. When do we make this rule only if it's a Mishnah? Why? Because we can trust that everybody remembered the Mishnah exactly the way it was said. Avo the Braisa, but if we're only quoting a Braisa, maybe we cannot rely on it. How do you know the people who recorded the Braisa actually memorized it accurately? Maybe the view that they said was Rabbi Yosi was actually Rabbi Huda's view, and Rabbi Huda's view was actually Rabbi Yosi's view, because remember, Braisa is not as reliable as a Mishnah. Because the Mishnah was studied in a Rebbe's yeshiva, and the Braisa was studied outside. And even though we learned that you can trust the Braisa from Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yosi and so on, but maybe we would have thought that this particular rule we don't follow in a Braisa. Kamashalan, we do. So why did Amishashi say we don't follow this rule? El Hachakama, this is what Amishashi said. Hani Kloli Lav Divri Hakalino. This is what Rabbi Yosi laid down, these rules about Rabbi Yosi and all that. Not everyone agrees, the Rav Lesle Hani Kloli, because Rav doesn't agree with these rules, as we had already before, yesterday. Now we had in the Mishnah Machlekes Rabbi Yechiel ben Nuri, if you have objects which are ownerless, do they also acquire their residence in the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov, and therefore on Yom Tov you can only take it to wherever the Tchum is allowed, where it is not according to the person who picked it up? Rabbi Yechiel ben Nuri says that objects which have no kavana also acquire residence, and the Chachamim say no. That you have to be aware and you have to be kind of your own residence. What about objects that will belong to a goy in the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov? Omar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmul, Chetzei Nochri, the object that belonged to a goy, Ein Koinin Shvisa, that they also do not acquire residentship in the beginning of Shabbos or beginning of Yom Tov. So if he brings it to you, you can take it to wherever you want to go. Or we'll see that you maybe it's stuck where it is. Leman, as we'll see. Ilema the Rabboni, tell me according to the Rabbonim, that it does not acquire a shvisa at all, does not acquire residence at all, I could take it to wherever I want, depending on whoever the original, you know, whoever the person who has it now, l'abim pshita, of course, hash the chefze hevke, madach objects which have no mind of their own, the less l'hubam have no owners, and yet they say, whoever picks it up, that's the chum that we follow, in kainin, shvisa, chefze hanachri, objects that belong to a goy, who don't have the rules of Shabbos and Yom Tov. So they're worse than an object that has nothing in mind. Here they have no rules of Shabbos. The east of Bailey, Mabaya, surely there's no shvisa, not acquiring residence. Ella, obviously we're telling you, it's according to Rabbi Yechiel ben Nuri, that even Rabbi Yechiel ben Nuri holds, when it comes to objects that they acquire the residence, but not if it belonged to a goy, kamar shalom. Who said? Maybe perhaps Rabbi Yechiel ben Nuri only said his rule, koinish shvisa hanim chetzei hefker, only when it comes to objects that are ownerless, the less l'bailim. It's ownerless, so therefore the object has a mind of its own. Aval chepzi nochi, which has an owner, but the owner doesn't have the laws of Shabbos or Yom Tov. What do you mean it acquired shavisa according to its owner? The owner doesn't have shavisa, doesn't have the idea of resting at all. These lebailim loy. Maybe Rabbi Yechman doesn't argue there. So how do we know? Who is it? I think I'm going to make, so I'll ask you a question. So basically, he came along with a ruling of Yudas Adem Mishmul that the chetzim of a goy are not koinah shvisa. So we'll ask a question on that ruling. Mates will ask a question, and then anybody even says, L'chayda, what's the point? Everyone sort of agrees that there's no shvisa there. Now the Gemara is going to ask a question, maybe there is shvisa. If you borrow some kind of utensil from a goy on Yom Tov, or v'chein ha-mashil lo'y l'nochri klim erev Yom Tov, or if you lend a keli to a goy erev Yom Tov. So when it came to Yom Tov, it was not yours, it was in the hands of the goy. And the goy brought it back to you on Yom Tov. So either you borrowed for the first time on Yom Tov, or before Yom Tov began, it was by the goy, and then he gave it back to you, your keli, but the beginning of Yom Tov, the onset of Yom Tov, it was in the goy's domain. And your warehouses that rested inside the tchum. In all of these cases, yesh lehen alpayim amel l'chol ruach. In all these cases, that you can take it, you can only take it 2,000 amels from where it is right now, wherever it was in the beginning of Shabbos. So it seems from here that a goy does have shrisa. And if a goy brought you fruits from outside of the tchum, so therefore we learned before that if something comes outside of the tchum, it's stuck in four amis, you know, unless it's brought against its will, then you have that whole closed area. But according to Gamliel, which you paskin, you're only stuck with four amis, and that's all. You can't move it. So it sounds clearly from here that a goy does have has ownership, and it's koinah shvisa at the beginning of Yom Tov, wherever the goy is. Which is exactly the opposite of what Shmuel said. If you can tell me Rabbi Yechim, there's one holds that just like an object that has its ownness, its kind acquires residence, so too a goy acquires residence for his objects wherever he was at the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov. That's where the position of this object, and therefore even though later on it moves over, it shifts to a yid on that same day. The yid can only transport it according to his original residence. Amar Yechem Nuri. That makes sense. This mission of Yechem Nuri. This brayso. Eliyahu Kesar Yechem Nuri. Chetz Hebrech ain't going to shvisa. If you can tell me that even Yechem Nuri concedes that an object belongs to a goy, since a goy doesn't have the idea of resting, there's no acquiring residenceship. Hamani. Then who is it? Let Rabbi Yechem Nuri. Let Rabbanan. It goes according to nobody.
Can I just ask on this? Are we talking about the Chetz HaGoy, or are you talking about the Yitzchak?
It makes absolutely no difference. It makes absolutely no difference. If the Goy borrowed from a Yid before Yom Tov and returned it to the Yid on Yom Tov, the main thing is, whose Rishus was it when Yom Tov began?
But if a Goy doesn't have a whole concept of Shvisa, how?
That's exactly what the Gemara thought in the beginning. But now we brought a Braisa that clearly says it doesn't matter if the Goy has Shvisa or not. The fact is the Goy was the owner. And if the Goy was the owner and the beginning of Yom Tov, then wherever that marks the residence, whether the Goy had Shvisa or not. So now that it comes to the Yid's Rishus on Yom Tov, then it's relevant to know where this object was, you know, situated or stationed at the beginning of Yom Tov. So Shmuel goes back, says, you're right, retraces the steps. Rabbi Yechim Anuri says that an object that is ownerless is koinah shvisa, so if a goy owns it, it is also koinah shvisa. I said, how could Shmuel before said that an object which belongs to a goy is not koinah shvisa, because a goy doesn't have holy Shabbos? Shmuel lo mekir Rabbanon. He's saying it according to Rabbanon, hold that an ownerless object has no shvisa. So the question is, what's the point? If an ownerless object has no shvisa, surely if the guy is the owner who doesn't have the concept of shvisa, surely there's no shvisa. What do you need to tell us for? Would the Gaon Rabbanon pshita? You tell me it's a pshita? No. Ma'otim, I would have thought that there's possibly valid reason to say that if a goy owned it in the beginning of Yom Tov or had it in his Rishus in Yom Tov, we should follow the steps of the goy. And that is, even though the goy doesn't have the concept of Shvisa, but it's so similar to a Yid, and if you're going to say that you can take it and take whatever you want, I would think that if the Yid had it Friday, another Yid had it Friday night, and he gives it to me, let's say Yom Tov, and he gives it to me on Yom Tov in the morning, I can take it to wherever I want to go. To wherever my tchum allows me to go, because just like a goy, what's the difference? People don't understand these little nuances. So maybe gzeira, we should be goyzer bailim the nochi or to bailim Yisrael. If by a goy we say that he brought it to you on Yom Tov morning, I can take it to wherever I'm allowed to go. Maybe the same thing happens if a yid gave it to you any morning. Kamashal, that's not so. So the Gemara once said, Rabbi Yechman holds that a goy is shvisa, and the Rabban holds no shvisa. But Rabbi Yechman, Says the Gemara, and Rabbi Chiya bar Avin argues that by Rabbi Shmuel, he said that Rabbi Yochanan Cheftzei Nochri Koine Shvisa. He actually holds that a goy is Koine Shvisa for the very reason we just said. Gzeira Bailan the Nochri Otu Bailan Yisrael. We are concerned that people will make a mistake and think that there's no. If I can take it, the goy brings it in the market, take whatever I want. So too, if a yid brings it to me. Says the Gemara, Hanu Dakri, they were these male rams. The rams, the osu l'mavachata, they were brought to the city of Mavachata on Yom Tov. These are the goyim who brought it there to sell. Shalu Rabbah l'mechuzah l'mizmah benayu. He allowed the people of Mechuzah to go ahead and buy these rams on Yom Tov itself. Talking about in a way where you're allowed to buy, for example, you don't talk about price until after Yom Tov. You just take it and then we'll talk about price afterwards. And he allowed them to bring it to Mechuzah. Now, even though Marvachta was already, the Goyim brought the rams from who knows where, so they were outside of the Tchum, brought it to Marvachta, and we said before, it was outside of the Tchum, maybe if you follow the opinion of Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, and you follow the Goy, then you're not taking more than four amas, and yet the Rav allowed them to bring it over to Mechuzah. Shalom, Mechuzah, Mizmah, Menai, Tabar, Omri, Rav, and Maidaitach. What do you think? Because you want to follow. So you want to follow Shmuel who said that the object by a goy in the beginning of Yom Tov, there's no tchum. You follow the people who the Eden on Yom Tov, wherever their tchum is. But for Shmuel, but remember Rabbi Yechanan argues, and we have a rule, a default, for Shmuel, Rabbi Yechanan, Allah, Rabbi Yechanan. We'll always follow Rabbi Yechanan rather than Shmuel. And therefore, we should follow Rabbi Yechanan that these animals cannot go more than four amas from where they are. How can you allow them to bring the mechuzah? And we ruled the name of Rabbi Yechon that you're not allowed to. So then Rava changed his mind. And then he said, you know what? And he says that you can, not the people of Mechuzah can buy it, the people of Mevacharta can buy it. Even the people of Mevacharta also have a problem. Because they are, or Mevrachta, however you pronounce it, they have a problem because they are, remember, you're only allowed to take it four amas. If something went outside of Chum on Yom Tov or on Shabbos, you can only go four amas. Why is he allowing them to take it throughout the entire city? Where it says, the kulam of Vacharta, l'diduk edal amas damya. Could be Pasuk Gamliel, that if you were taken by Goyim captive, or you were wandering about without realizing you walked outside of the Chum, and you end up in a closed area, you can walk throughout the entire enclosed area. Over here, because these Kalim had no choice, and the Goyim, don't care about Shabbos, so it's like taken by force, and therefore, at least the city of Mavarchata, which had walls around it, or it's a closed area, you're allowed to carry it, to take it around the whole city. In fact, Rashi says they have to have walls around it before, but other Rishayim hold, you don't even need walls around it. This is the city, and you're allowed to walk throughout the entire city. It's like a Dal Namir. Another day, Rabchiya said that Cheres, if you have Beit Chumash Shabbos, let's say you have a river or something between two cities, and this river is the Chum between these two cities. Now the question is, can you take water from that river? Because how do you know that the water on your side of the river, it wasn't on the other side of the river last night, which means it's not it was outside your Chum, and therefore it should be usur to bring it now. So he says, if there was a fishnet, Shebein Chumi Shabbos, if there was a fish net between Chumi Shabbos, then he says here, tzorich, that this river, whatever it is, needs a mechitza shel barzel lahafsikoi. It's not good enough because the fish net water can go right through, and maybe the water seeping through is water from outside the Chum, and then you're not allowed to bring it because the water follows the city where it came from. So therefore, we need a metal divider, a metal partition, and that metal partition is going to divide the two sides of the river. And only then you know the water on your side is your side was there the whole time. Mechayich Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina starts to smile. Says the Gemara, my time become mechayich. What is smiling for? Ilam should have turned like Rabbi Chanuri luchumra because he's being machmei Chanuri. That this is the chayda that the water is a keli, and he's yet saying that keli also have the laws of tchum, and we don't say it goes according to the person who draws it, and he wants to be machmei. And the EU should look at Rabbanon, and Rabbi Yechanina paskins like the Rabbanon when it comes to Kalim, which is actually the halacha, the kula, that doesn't matter. The water has no tchum, has no shvis, and therefore whoever draws the water, that's who's whom you follow. So the Gemara asks, for that you're smiling. You're so arrogant. Because you rule Hakham Lakula, Mandat Tanya Lukumna Mechaichala. So somebody wants to be Machmir, you're making fun of him and poking fun and mocking him. Elot, no, Mishum, because we learned that Tanya, Naharas HaMoshchin, rivers that are constantly flowing, the Mayonas HaNoivim, or springs that are constantly flowing, Harehen Keragli Kol Adam. They have the law, like they follow the Ragli Kol Adam, there's no Dinot Tchum over there, because they're constantly moving, they're constantly in motion. So there's no, you know, the whole idea of resonance is in one place. And because these things are flowing, even though those who hold that, you know, an object is kind of shvisa, but there's no, all it has to be stationary. Water is not stationary, so therefore definitely follow Ragli Hamemale, the person who picks it up. Says the Gemara, Dilma B'chanasin, how do you know we're talking about flowing river? Maybe it's talking about like a pond or something that's in one place, it's stable, it's stationary. Ella Mishum Diktoni, because it says, because you know why he mocked him? Because he insisted that Tzorich Mechitza Shel Barzel Hafsika. He insisted that the only thing that can divide water, you can't have a net or something, it has to be a metal partition that divides the water, separates the two sides of the river, as if the metal partition actually helps. Why can't you just use sticks or reeds? The Isle of Amaya, because water, you know, escapes, it goes right through. What do you think? And a partition made out of metal. Also because water can go right through it. So, you know, if you're being so machmir, because you don't want any water coming from the other side, what's going to help metal? And because we're assuming that this partition didn't go mamish, bury itself in the floor. And even if you did, you know, it's impossible, there shouldn't be gaps along the floor, because it's not level, and water comes right through. Says the Gemara, the Dilma Tzadim of the Kohen, maybe you misunderstood what he said. Maybe what he's saying is, you need a metal partition, but since it's not going to help, because water grows it through, and therefore, and the Tekonogam, maybe Taka says, if you have a river, where part of the river is in one chum, and part of the other chum, you cannot draw water on Yom Tov from there. Maybe that's exactly what he's trying to say. And you missed the whole point. He says, no. You know why I mocked him? Mishum dekal hu shekila chacham b'mayim. When it comes to drawing water on Yom Tov, the Chachamim treated it far more leniently than anywhere else, and we therefore shouldn't have been stricter. You're allowed to be machmir whatever you want, but not when it comes to drawing water. And where do we see that the Chachamim will make by water? We had this before already. Because Rav Tavla, like Rav Tavla said, I have a question, Mechitza Tuluya, if you have a suspended, you have a balcony above a well, and you're underneath your balcony, you made a mechitza. Usually mechitza has to come all the way down to the ground within three tvachim. But here it's suspended in the air. Can you draw? You have a hole in your balcony and you have a rope with a bucket. Can you suspend, you know, can you drop the bucket from your balcony into the water and take it from the water, which is the yachid, to your balcony, which is the yachid? Even though you don't really have mechitza going all the way down. If it's over a house, can you do that? It doesn't work. If you're above a dilapidated house or something, and you want to take things out of their chairs, whatever it is, through your balcony, you can't, because it's not a proper mechitza. But b'mayim, where can you if there's a well beneath? When it came to water, because people need water, and the Chacham are very lenient. So when it comes to this particular river or creek, whatever it is, that's dividing the two cities, and it's right in the Tchum, ends right there, some midpoint of that water, both sides can take it, and there's no point in being machmel like a Yechon and Mebruka, because by water we are always make it as easy as possible. Okay? Everyone should have a